This show is designed to give general information related to investing in finance. Neither Aaron Katzman, his guests, nor the radio station are rendering legal, tax, or specific investment advice. If you need such advice, contact a licensed advisor.
And welcome to the Aaron Katzman Show. I'm your host, Aaron Katzman. We speak to you about your life, your money, and your investments. And as always, we're coming to you from the spiritual and soon-to-be financial capital of the world, Jerusalem, Israel. If you like this content, please hit the like button below. If you've not yet done so, please subscribe to both the YouTube channel and to the podcast. We are continuing on our voyage about how to be an entrepreneur in Israel. When you're not in the world of high tech, right? Believe it or not, there is an economy out there that is not just about cyber and software and AI and all those fun things. But the people who do real things and make real things. And it's my pleasure to bring on the show Ariel Questel, who is the founder, and we're going to get to this in a second, of Rubber Band Studio, a branding design agency based in Gush Etzion. She is from New York, and she is driven by her love of design and commitment to fostering awareness of climate change and sustainability. Okay, her clientele is predominantly organizations, small businesses, startups. Okay, we'll get a little bit of high tech in, who are marketing to an international English-speaking audience. Ariel, please be welcomed to the show.
Hi, that's all I got.
So let's jump right in. Okay. First of all, what is it that you do?
So I am what they now call brand designer, which is one of the things. It's a logo, but it's also the entire visual language of everything that you produce. I end up doing a lot of websites, less brochures than I used to, but things like that, where's the logo sitting? What are the fonts? What are the colors? What is the whole vibe that the brand is trying to create with visual language? The logo is just a small part.
Okay. And the name of your firm jumps out at me as rather unusual. How did you ever come up with the name of a Rubber Band Studio?
Oh my gosh. Because it's just a very energetic feeling and also Gamish, very flexible. So it just came to me. Actually, my husband said I should use it. He's like, that's a good name for you. And I'm like, actually, it is. And that was like 15 years ago, and it stuck. I even tried to change it because a lot of business consultants will say, you know, if it's just you and people are coming to you just for you, you should change it to your name so that they know who they're coming to. And I actually asked around to some marketing friends of mine, and they're like, no, why would you do that? That's a great name. I'm like, okay, so there it is. It's going to stay. And it stays.
Okay. Okay, so I was at your website and I was looking at some of the stuff, and what sort of jumps out is you're trying to somehow merge sustainability, environmental awareness with design, right? With branding. Can you talk a little bit about how that is, what it means?
It's funny. There is something called sustainable design, which is it's a very specific thing, and it really has to do with your process. It's very much a business consultant sort of a field. Like, how can I make my business more sustainable? Yes, you know, use less emissions and use less materials and think consciously about things like that. But at the end of the day, for me as a brand designer, I can only say, well, use recycled paper if it's appropriate for your business. And in terms for me, it just happens to be like, okay, I'll use less paper. I will talk about it. It really ended up being more about voicing my opinion and trying to get other people to hear me than it was about actually changing the way other people are doing business. But I do prefer and reach out to sustainable businesses. Okay. Which is a different question, because the somebody brilliant, and I will give names here, Gaul Jasper at he's at Finn Partners, which is a global PR firm. He's a managing partner here in Israel. I hope I got that title right. He said to me something very interesting. He said that sustainable companies are the orphan child of startups, because businesses will only spend on sustainable practice if it's good for their bottom line. And I found that very interesting, and it's something that I took to heart, and I realized that that was the way I was going to work on it. So for me, a sustainable brand is something that can be reused efficiently and consistently without reinventing the wheel every time. You have all the materials at the beginning, and you have everything you need, and you have instructions, and you have a visual language, and it represents what you need it to represent, and you don't have to rethink it every time. So it becomes more efficiency for you than it becomes about climate change. That's what ended up happening. I did for actually during, ironically, it was 2020. I decided it was time for me to reach out to green tech startups. So I got to know a lot of them in the business. Mm-hmm. And I found that he was right. There was not a lot of money in the startup world. Oh, this is the startup conversation. There wasn't a lot of money in the really early startups to spend on branding because they're just trying to get the deck out there. They just want VC. So I got a lot of exposure to the industry, to the whole field, and I love it. And I love, and I keep on top of what's going on in the green tech industry. But I also know that it's a lot like organizations where it's in some ways it's nonprofit. It's the feel good factor as opposed to the financially viable factor. But the ones that are succeeding are the ones that are also successful financially and help the companies that they are, you know, marketing to financially.
Okay, interesting. So you, as I introduced you, you made Aliyah. You moved to Israel from a town outside of New York. And you came how long ago?
The second time. It was 19 years ago.
Years ago. Mm-hmm. When you came, right, did you already have your own company? Like, tell us a little bit about the journey to Rubber Band Studio.
How much time do you have? Okay. So I started out not having a clue what I wanted. Just coincidentally, I worked at a huge advertising agency out of college, but I didn't work in the graphic design side at all. I was very intimidated by them. They were so cool. But it didn't work out for me because I was just in administration or whatever. It was client liaison stuff. I learned a lot of the stuff that I didn't know would be relevant later on, but I did. And I left New York City to go to study painting in Jerusalem. I know that makes no sense. That's what I did. And I still had no plan. And I realized that I didn't want to be an artist full time because I felt that I needed parameters. I needed to be doing something that had a purpose, that was productive, that was structured. So I felt that as an artist, I would be, well, let me see how I feel. And I put that on canvas. And I was like, that's too much for me. So I went back to New York and didn't have a career plan. I was just working in nonprofits all over the place. And then I got married and moved here, still had no career plans. I was already, you know, I wasn't young anymore for people who don't have a career plan. And then, this is embarrassing, but I can't believe I'm saying this in public. My mom said, would you please just do graphic design? And I was like, okay. And you know what? She was right. It was the best decision I ever made. I loved it because it did combine my love of the art stuff, as well as thinking efficiently in terms of, well, how can I make this one thing express all of those things in the most compact manner? Kind of like engineering stuff. So, and I'll tell this to people all the time, is that you can hit Control Z, undo, when you're working in a computer. You can't do that in Paint. So it made it like, it was just the combination. And I just really liked the way I had to think strategically about the visual language that I was creating. And then I've been doing that ever since.
Mm-hmm. And when you were young, did you ever sort of, when you were growing up, right, did you have like a house that was entrepreneurial? Did you think one day that you were going to have your own business? Anything like that?
No. I came from a very, go to college, get a job, save for retirement, work for the government sort of a thing. Like, it was very like that. It wasn't an entrepreneurial house.
Interesting.
But the structure and the practicality is still important and it's very strong. I did come from a house that like was like we talked a lot about sustainability at the time, or you know, climate change, stuff like that. I didn't know that's what it didn't have names, those names at the time, but it was the language.
And did you when you went on your own, right? When you started your own company, did you like bounce the idea around with people, you know, and if so, did they, you know, give feedback, positive or negative, or did you just sort of take the plunge? Like, how did you get to that point?
Okay.
I'm going for
another,
it.
Is that how it happened sort of situation? I was looking for work. I wanted to work in a studio because I wanted to be around other creatives so we could bounce ideas off each other. And I realized that you had to build a portfolio in order to get a job. So I started taking on projects at very low rates just to build a portfolio. And in the end, I didn't have time to find a job. It snowballed.
Hmm.
And yeah, that's how I ended up in my own business.
Wow.
It just happened that one of the organizations I worked for, they had a lot of people who worked on staff there, but because of organizations, Jewish organizations have their own way of existing. There was a lot of turnover in that office.
Right.
And it just happened that a lot of people in that office lived in my neighborhood and said, oh, I heard you're a graphic designer. And then they would take them with me to their next position and their next position. And that's how I ended up being in business on my own. It wasn't, oh, I want to be a business owner.
Right. Interesting. So a lot of people who are entrepreneurs, start their business, right, and because it's something they enjoy to do, right? They just, okay, it's sort of a natural progression, and that's sort of what you did. Plus, you were, you know, the perks of already having sort of a clientele that was sort of coming to you already.
Right.
But then there's the other side, right? There's the, you know, the taxes, and there's the forms, and there's a bureaucracy, and incorporating all that kind of fun stuff. How did you sort of, and to boot, it's in, you know, you came to Israel from New York, and yeah, all of a sudden you're trying to create a business in a foreign country with a foreign language. How did that sort of work?
That's a very good question. First of all, because I had never done any advanced paperwork and form stuff really as an American, it wasn't like, oh, now I have to do it all in Hebrew. It was just gradual. Well, this is how you're doing it. Oh, it happens to be in Hebrew. I didn't know the tax laws in the States. I don't know what I'm doing differently. I'm just doing whatever it is that I need to do. The other thing is that it really happened gradually. I mean, I started out small. I wasn't thinking in terms of how to, you know, negotiate all these things. It was just, well, I'm going to take on a project. I guess I'll ask them to pay me in cash. I mean, this was 16, 17 years ago. So I wasn't thinking, oh, I don't know how to do that. It was also, the technology is so different now. I sound like an old lady, but it's true. Like, I couldn't do online billing at the time. Now I can. It's a given. One of the other things I think about, this is not related to bureaucracy, but it's like, I really wanted to do web design for years, and I've tried so many different ways, learned coding, all this. But I was like, I wish I could do it and just put it there instead of having to learn how to code. And I tried coding, just like, but now it's a given. Everybody does that. There's lots of ways to design the demo, the mock-up, and then send it to a developer. And that's just the way it's done most of the time now. So things changed a lot, but because it was gradual for me, it wasn't like an overwhelming, how do I deal with bureaucracy? It's like, okay, you know, 5 or 6 years later, okay, I'm ready to turn this into an Osek Patur, which is below the tax bracket. Uh-huh. And then at some point I was like, okay, this is a bigger situation. Now I'm going to go to the upper tax bracket. So it's not an inundation of paperwork.
Okay. Interesting. A lot of people who are either have already made Aliyah or thinking about Aliyah are also tossing around the idea of, you know what, maybe I'll have my own business here in Israel. Do you have any tips sort of that you can give them, you know, that sort of helped you, you know, get to where you are today that might be useful for them?
I think a lot of it has to do with looking back. I'll say that things went a certain way. For example, it can sometimes be easier to start your own business than to work in a company, not an organization necessarily, because you don't have to. It's unfortunate, but the language barrier is strong. So you end up, it's easier to work in a language that you're comfortable with than going out there into a job market that you're just not familiar with. So we actually, in some ways, I think a lot of Olim actually start their own businesses because of that very reason. You know, their skill set from the States doesn't translate here or something like that. And they thought they'd have a career, but in the end it doesn't work out. And a lot of people end up taking their hobbies or their side thing or something they never really thought was a business and turning it into a small business. There's a lot of people out here who do that. And they end up working with a lot of other English speakers. Now, for me, what I do is I do try to reach out to Hebrew-speaking clients. Again, for me, it is an advantage that I'm an English speaker because most of the time, these organizations and these companies and these startups that I'm talking to, they're marketing to an English-speaking population. You know, again, a nonprofit, very often their donors are somewhere in the States. That's just the way it is. The startups, they need to present in Europe. They need to present in California, then English. So that is actually an advantage when it comes to running a marketing firm or a marketing related firm.
That's really interesting. And
the most important thing to me is the network of, at this point, I have a large network of professionals who I consider like my work friends. Like, I don't feel like I work by myself. I have so many people, I have so many communications, marketing people, content people, web developers, all the people, their clients, you know, and it's just, there's a conference and I'm like, oh, hey, how you doing? You know, and if one of this, like, there's a conference coming up soon. And it's like, I know everybody on the panel. And it's like, I mean, I'm not going, it's not totally unrelated to me, but it's just, there is a strong community of small business entrepreneurs in Israel, especially in the marketing world.
And I guess based on what you're saying, that actually helps drive business, right? You all are sort
it
of,
does.
You can all create like a little web within your
yeah.
network.
Yeah, I do feel that strongly. I wonder if it's too insular, like we're isolated from, I'm looking out my window at the rest of the country, by the way. That's why I keep looking at it. But
what's going on in the rest of the country?
It's really disgusting out, by the way. Dance is just not cool. And then there was a helicopter a few minutes ago. But anyway, so I find that network of people in my industry is just really a support. And I have other graphic designers who we communicate with, and we bounce off ideas against each other. But it took years to get to the point where I have enough of a network to say, I don't feel like I'm by myself.
Interesting. And sort of as a sole proprietor, right, do you, you mentioned that you started off and you sort of climbed the ladder, right? You are a second tsura, right? Or whatever they call it, right? Where you were beyond, you were below a certain amount of revenue and then you jumped above that. How have you found just trying to scale your business as an individual? Is that like an issue that you have?
Yes. It is a challenge because this goes back to your question. Some people just start out as an entrepreneur. There's two reasons somebody would become an entrepreneur. They love this whole concept of running a business, or they have a skill or a service that they want to provide. And the best way to do that is to create their own business.
Mm-hmm.
The first person is always going to think, how am I going to scale up? What do I need to do to get to the next level? Oh, should I do this? Okay, I'll do that. It's a lot simpler. But when you're talking about an artisan or a service provider or whatever it is that they do, it's a lot more about what they're doing as opposed to the business. It's much harder to hire somebody. So for me, it was easier to hire a content writer, a developer, a marketer, you know, if I needed, you know, but not actually a junior designer. So it actually took me many years to get to the point where I'm like, I am ready to hire a junior designer. And I didn't give her anything to do. So it takes a lot more courage for somebody who is not entrepreneur by nature. I have graphic design friends who use graphic design as a way to build a business. It was their vessel. And they think like business owners. It's like scale up, scale up, scale up, scale up. I know graphic designers whose entire clientele is in the United States. They don't even deal with shekels at all. Everything is in the States. That's not relevant, but it's still interesting.
No, but it's interesting. And I'll tell you, I've found as an entrepreneur that by far and away is the biggest challenge because, right, you're doing something, giving up control of any part of the process is so, so difficult, but then you're overwhelmed, right? So
You've
done, it sounds like a great job, at least of sort of the satellite aspects of your work to be able to outsource those to other people. But as you said, you hired a junior designer and weren't able to give her any work because you had to keep control of that. That's, you know, from all these interviews and from doing it myself, it's clear that's like the number one struggle that I think small business owners have right. is taking it to the, it's it getting over that hump.
Yes, it is a big, it becomes, I'm doing my craft to I am managing other people to do the craft. And it's a very different experience. It also, you're afraid of the time. What if it takes me more time to explain it and change things and fix things than it does to just do it myself? Mm-hmm. But in the end, after time, it takes less time.
It's really interesting. I like that. Last tip for somebody, you know, should they go, if somebody's coming here, they want to start their own business, should they go for it? Should they not go for it? You know,
that's a very good question. It's in, like I said before, in many ways, it is easier than getting a job in a high tech market somewhere in the world. It is safer. It is more familiar. You can communicate with people in the same world. If you prefer that, then yes. If your job that you transferred with just does not happen, yes. I have doctors who run startups on the street. You know, it just ends up being, sometimes that's just a solution to, I don't have a place or I don't know how to get that job. On the other hand, I will honestly say, like you said earlier at the beginning, that you're talking about marketing and the accountants. I have to do my own marketing. If I was just being handed projects at a job, I wouldn't have to do my own marketing. So it does have its pros and cons. I really love being charged with my own schedule. It's amazing.
That's great. That is great. Yeah. So Ariel, thanks so much for coming on the show. Once again, how can people get in touch with you?
Rubberbandstudio.com. You can email me at Ariel@rubberbandstudio.com, or you can find me on LinkedIn as Ariel Questel, because that is my name.
That's great. Thanks so much for coming on. This is really great, really informative.
Thank you for your invitation.
My pleasure. You have been tuning in to the Erin Katzman Show, where we speak to you about your life, your money, and your investments. If you like this content, please hit the like button below. And if you've not yet done so, please, please, please subscribe to both the YouTube channel and to the podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we'll speak to you soon.